Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I had last week on the program, Sherry Ray, and she was talking to me a little bit about Pearl Chase. And in the meantime, I was reading all of the wonderful, fun things that the EQ25 Alliance is up to and how we're going to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Santa Barbara Quake. And I thought, let me call my friend Betsy Green and let's see if we can get the two of them together on the air today to talk a little bit about what happened in the earthquake. And then Betsy's got a series that she does about the survivors of the quake. And I was hoping that we can talk in the first half hour about the earthquake itself. And then in the second half hour, I think Sherry's going to guide us through some of the rebuilding giants of our community. I want to start out by just telling you guys a little bit about the cool stuff that's happening. It doesn't seem like there's one evening that isn't something to do with our earthquake celebration. And I spoke with the director yesterday of the EQ25 Alliance, and I said, you know, can you send me a packet on all the good things that are going to happen, which he did. And so just to tell you a little bit, the committee, which involves Betsy, by the way, she's on the board. The committee was established, or I should say the alliance was established, to promote the commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the 1925 Santa Barbara earthquake. There's all kinds of people that if you went online and took a look at this, you'd say, okay, these are the notable folks that are real movers and shakers in our community. The board is extensive and interesting people. And we want to say that they want to promote the earthquake knowledge, history, and the history around Santa Barbara, and also the social conditions. One of the really interesting things that kept coming up when I was talking to the PR person for EQ25, and do go online and check it out, dear listener, was how the community hung together. Instead of pulling apart, really hung together. And the spirit of cooperation amongst the community after this, at the time, kind of a tragedy, 11 people killed, et cetera. Remarkable. Some of the photos, Richard, you should go online. Young men that were just amateur radio enthusiasts drag a desk to the middle of State Street and start sending out SOS to the Navy ships that are passing the channel. I mean, it's amazing how people pulled together at that time. So just mark your calendars. The Great Quake Centennial Commemoration is June 28th. The whole block of the 1100 block of State Street from 12 to 4 is going to erupt, I should say, in wonderful celebrations. And then the Day of Remembrance on June 29th is at the Mission. Just a quick rundown before we start really talking about the quake. The Architectural Foundation of Santa Barbara walking tours are happening. Take a look online every Sunday. The earthquake exhibit is on at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum. The Architectural Foundation Gallery is featuring the work of an artist that focuses on the built environment. And a fantastic, Gimme Shelter, it's called, actually. The artist is Marcia Rickard. The Santa Barbara Earthquake Stories and Lives Remembered at the Seyun Genealogical Library. You can take a look at that exhibit. The lobby display at the Santa Barbara Public Library, all about the earthquake. The City to Rise Again on Ruins, the Edson Smith Photo Collection, also at the Public Library. Huguette Clark remembers the earthquake at Bellascardo. And they've got recordings of her and talking about what happened during the quake. Sherry Ray did a lecture this past week on Pearl Chase, the woman who shaped our city, part one. Part two is coming up. What's really fun is there's two organizations that are related to the Natural History Museum, where they're doing astronomy related to the seismic legacy. And it's at watering holes, we should say. One is at the Special Brewing Company, the M Special Brewing Company. The other one, Science Pub, is at the Dargan's Irish Pub and Restaurant. They're going to be talking about the earthquake, two separate events where you can have food and booze while you learn about the quake. The Architectural Foundation, again, we have Sherry speaking on June 12th. And this is the Pearl Chase Woman Who Shaped Our City, Part 2, at 6 p.m. Betsy's speaking at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum on June 18th, Stories of Survival from the Great Earthquake. And that's happening at 5:30 at the Santa Barbara Historical Museum. So that's June 18th. Why Buildings Fell. That is a cool thing that the Architectural Foundation is doing with structural engineers. They're going to talk about why certain buildings fell, why certain buildings right next door did not. That's June 19th at 6 p.m. at the Architectural Foundation. Then we've got centennial evening tours happening, and we're going to talk about the, as we walk around the city, we're going to be talking about some of the Colonial Revival buildings that emerged in the wake of the earthquake. And then my buddy Neil Graffy is going to do a 1925 earthquake history downtown walking tour on June 25th. Architectural Foundation, The Great Earthquake and the Survivors Speak by Betsy again on June 26th. At the Architectural Foundation Gallery. And then Pearl Chase Society, here we have Sherry speaking again, 6 p.m. on June 27th. Pearl Chase Society presents Kellam DeForest Speaker Series, Bernard and Irene Hoffman and their role in the reconstruction of our city. Robert Hoover, Emeritus Professor at Cal Poly, speaks at the Santa Barbara Mission Archive and Library about the old mission. Not this was not the old mission's first quake. Didn't know that. And then we have the Great Quake Day of Remembrance, like I mentioned, on June 28th, the 1100 block of State Street. Don't miss that. American Institute of Architects is speaking at the Libero Theater, a big symposium, an important one, moderated by Robert Uli, who is well-known to me as an artist and an architect, convening a whole panel of really important folks to talk about urban planning changes and seismic safety changes over the period of 100 years. And that's happening at the Libero Sunday, June 29th from 5 to 8 p.m. And I think Neil Graffy is also going to participate in that. Casa del Herrero Centennial Community Day, talking about wonderful things happening at the Casa del Herrero in terms of how we're going to look at our history through famous old maps. How interesting is that? That's at the Casa del Herrero. And then, like I say, we've got two of the most noted speakers throughout this whole commemorative month. Speaking with us today, that's Betsy J. Green and Sherry Ray. Betsy, let's start off with setting the stage a little bit. You say that at the beginning of the morning of the quake, it's funny, Richard and I were just talking before the show about animals. You're describing various animals and their early warning systems. Tell us more about that.
Well, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, some people noticed that their animals started acting strangely. There were barnyard animals, you know, mooing and clucking, and people's dogs and cats were making a strange noise or running under the bed or something. But it really didn't wake people up, or people really didn't notice it. There was a slight tremor at that point. And in the Historical Museum's exhibit now about the earthquake, there's an actual image of a seismic chart, a little round circle, and you can see that there was a tremor at about 3 o'clock in the morning. So the animals felt it. Probably even if people were awake, they would not have felt it. But the main quake did come at about 6:42 in the morning, and that definitely woke everybody up.
And there's, you're saying it's interesting. A lot of seismologists were saying that if it had happened a little later, it would have been far more tragic because people would have been, you know, going to work, going to school, et cetera, et cetera. Talk to me about that a little bit. So what was the blessing in that hour?
Well, the blessing was that most people were home and children were home. And most people in their homes, if you had a one-story home made out of wood, it would flex a little bit in the earthquake. The chimney might fall down, and so you couldn't use your stove for a while, but you really were not injured from anything inside the house. Most of the people who were killed were, there only seems to be about 11 people who died. There were two who were in a hotel that collapsed, the Arlington Hotel, but the other people seemed to have been killed by debris. So at 6:42 or whatever, they were out on the street or the sidewalk and were killed by parts of the building falling down.
Now, tell me a little bit about that. I was reading that there was an early morning swimmer, and she experienced something interesting. Talk to me about that.
Well, people are often asking me about a tsunami, first of all, a tidal wave. Now, there was not one in 1925, but apparently there had been one in 1812, our first big recorded earthquake, and that was fairly serious, although there's not a lot of information about it. But in 1925, we did not have a tidal wave or tsunami, and the only thing that I found was one guy said he was out swimming, or just off the coast, and where he was in water waist deep, the water suddenly receded, and he was standing on the sand. And then he also noticed a big piece of cliff fall down into the water. That was part of a sandstone formation called Castle Rock, for which Castillo Street is named. But that seemed to be the only mishap from the water. The quake seemed to now, they figured out, the epicenter was out somewhere out in the channel. And so there was some cliffs falling out on the islands, but obviously there were not many people there, and no one seems to have been injured or killed out there. But then it seems the quake seems to have moved inland, and a couple of people said they were out standing on State Street in the morning and saw building after building after building fall down or pieces fell off.
Huh. So, you know, I have a dumb question for you, and you alluded to
it. No such thing as a dumb question, Elizabeth.
No, you're going to laugh at this one, because I was trying to get my research together, and I realized that you mentioned just a few minutes ago that you're in a wooden house, the wood flexes, but the chimney often is of brick and falls down, and therefore people couldn't cook. So was the stove connected to the chimney in those days?
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people, whether you had a gas stove or I don't know if there was electric back then, or wood or something like that, that's where it was connected.
Okay, through the chimney, for example, where that maybe the firebox, that kind of chimney?
Right. Yeah. Well, imagine having a barbecue inside your house. You know, it'd get pretty smoky after a while.
Okay. Yeah. So I was just trying to think. You know, made me look and see what kind of stoves people had in 1925.
Well, often if in older homes, in a kitchen behind the stove, there's a big sort of brass plate now that indicates where the vent from the stove used to go through the wall.
Yeah. Ah, yes. Okay. Yes, I have seen that, and now I understand. So, you know, one of the previous times that I've spoken to you, Betsy, is about your wonderful, wonderful book, and I sent it to my mom, actually, about the silence on the islands.
Oh.
So the silent films that happened on our Channel Islands. You mentioned that there was always famous folks around Santa Barbara and Montecito, for example. And you mentioned a couple of famous actors, or mentioned one that an actor who was visiting woke up and flipped a coin to decide if he should get on the early train. Tell me about
that. Okay, so there was an actor appearing at the live stage at the Potter Theater, which was on Lower State Street. It's not there anymore. It fell down in the earthquake. So he woke up at 6:30, about 6:15 or something in the morning, and flipped a coin to decide whether he should stay in bed and sleep or should he get the early train. A train came through Santa Barbara at around 6:30. It was going from San Francisco down toward L.A. And he flipped the coin and he lost, and then he decided to get on the train. So he got on the 6:30 train and headed south. And shortly after that, about the time that people were heading through Summerland, the earthquake hit there, so they knew that something had happened. But he got a lot of press saying, "Well, you know, I flipped a coin, and you know, I had this event that I just missed the quake, and that part was true." But then he got a lot of press out of that, and then after that, literally dozens and dozens of actors and directors and performers in LA said, "I also had a hunch I shouldn't go to Santa Barbara on June 29th that day."
Capitalizing on it. Yes,
yes.
I understand. So, yeah. So where was this actor staying? It wasn't at one of the hotels that fell down, was it?
Yes, he was in one of the hotels. I don't know that it was the one that fell down. There were a couple that fell down. I'm not sure which one he was in.
Okay. And then I just want to mention, Richard's going to give us a sign we have to go to a quick break. But if you're interested, the questions that I'm coming up with for Betsy, you know, there's the source is her book. And the book is called Way Back When, Santa Barbara in 1925. And you can get that at all of the local bookstores, et cetera, and also online, et cetera. But what's interesting to me is I've covered a couple of these books with Betsy on the air before, but she started her Way Back When books in writing about Santa Barbara in 1913. She's done 1913, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, skipped, took a hiatus for COVID. Because, you know, of course, she was writing those books. It dawned on me, Betsy, it took me a few minutes. It dawned on me that you were writing those books 100 years after. So, mm-hmm. you know, by the time COVID hit, that was 2020. So you would have been writing about 1920. So you mm-hmm. skipped 1920, 1921, 1923, the three big years of COVID. And 1924, you started again. She also wrote Mesopedia about the Mesa and behind the scenes at the Flying A. And of course, Silence on the Islands as well. And, you know, Betsy, tell us a little bit about the Quake Fest. You're going to be there with a special sign, I understand.
Yes, I will have a sign. I'll be at the Historical Museum's table, and my sign will be saying, I'll have a picture of the earthquake and saying, "Ask a historian," because there are a lot of questions about the quake, a lot of misinformation, you know, the whole tsunami thing, et cetera. But it's an important event, and people want to know about it in terms of what happened in the past and what might happen in the future.
So you're going to be at the Historical Museum, not La Arcata?
Yes, I'll be at La Arcata. The Historical Museum will have a table or a booth at
okay.
La Arcata.
Okay. And you'll have your books available there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And I think this is going to be kind of a very interesting, an interesting show today because Sherry Ray is with us. And Sherry, while we go to quick break, I want you to think of some questions, ask Betsy. Just a shout out, you know, coming up, she's presenting stories of the survivors and she's already done one date, but June 21st, at Genealogical Society, and then June 26th at the Architectural Foundation. So if you're interested to hear more about the quake, and what struck me was the lack of looting
mm-hmm.
and the help that various sister cities, San Francisco, Los Angeles, the Marines, there's one story you recount where one of the big cities send thousands of loaves of bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mayor of Santa Barbara asked the mayor of Los Angeles for milk, bread, and cooked food, because as I mentioned, people couldn't use stoves. And I believe Los Angeles sent us 6,000 loaves of bread. And one of the survivors that I quote from said, we were very happy to get that. Because back it's then, amazing. People were making their own bread, way back when.
Right. And so, you know, there's a picture. And by the way, if you're interested, I would urge everybody to take a look at the EQ25 website. It's so interesting because there's a photo of this pile of food in the middle of the street, and nobody's pushing or shoving to get to it. Everybody's very, I mean, they look very happy, actually.
Well, I was always worried about what would happen when the big one hit, and I was there, and I'm not as worried as I was before. I feel very comfortable about how well people responded.
Yeah, that was then, though. I'm wondering, yeah. So, all right, well, Richard, let's go to quick break. We get back from the break. Sherry's going to take the reins for a minute and ask Betsy a couple of questions. And as we're saying, this is all coming from Betsy's book, so this is an important book to have if you're interested about the earthquake 100 years ago. Betsy, just very quickly, was the I know Goleta and Carpinteria weren't affected, but about how many people were, I guess, sleeping in parks and sleeping in automobiles, et cetera? How many people were impacted and for how long?
Well, we had about 20,000 people in Santa Barbara, and a lot of people did not feel comfortable sleeping in their houses for the first week or so. There were a couple of little aftershocks as well, and I mean, we know now that the worst happened and was over by 7 a.m., but they didn't know that back then. They thought maybe a really, really big one was coming next. And so, yeah, some people were sleeping in cots or sleeping in the parks. Or if they had a nice car, they would sleep in the car. I mean, the same kind of things that we would probably do today.
Mm. And how long were people, I mean, obviously, the rebuilding process was pretty severe.
Well, a lot of people's homes were in pretty good shape. So little by little, and I would say after a week or so, people would start going back in their homes.
And to schools, were any schools impacted?
Schools were, yeah, some of the schools were, but school term was over by then. And the high school was newly built. That was only built in 1924. So that was in really good shape. In fact, the Marines camped in Peabody Stadium at the school.
And the Marines were here to curb looting and because I've seen in some of the photos, you see these gentlemen with their odd-looking uniforms and a rifle over their shoulder in the middle of State Street, but that wasn't necessary, really, was it?
No, I think it was just, I don't believe that we asked for the Marines. I think that was just sort of sent as soon as the government found or learned that there was an earthquake, they sent them. It doesn't sound like they did very much, and after a couple of weeks, they went back. The only looting that I've seen was in 1926, which I'm researching now. Some guy was going through the ruins of the Arlington Hotel and stealing bathtubs.
Of all things. All right, let's go to quick break. When we get back from the break. Well, first of all, I'm reintroduced. Betsy J. Green is with me, a historian in town, and she's speaking about the earthquake because we are going to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the earthquake in 1925. And then also Sherry Ray is with us. Her book is A String of Pearls about Pearl Chase, who was instrumental in the rebuilding of Santa Barbara, gave us a clean slate in a way for Pearl's aesthetic. She's also doing a talk about two people that I didn't know were instrumental in rebuilding, but it's Bernard and Irene Hoffman. And we're going to talk a little bit about their role. This is Pearl Chase Society. Sherry Ray is doing a talk, I think it's June 27th, right, Sherry?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, June 27th at 6 p.m. at the Island Common Theater on Canon Perdido Street. So that should be a really interesting talk about real visionaries in our town. It wouldn't look the same. Our town would not have looked the same had it not been for that earthquake 100 years ago. Okay, Richard, let's go to quick break.
When I'm drowning low,
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. Have the pleasure of speaking with two experts on our earthquake and the aftermath of our earthquake. 100 years ago, we had the quake that some people think may have been the big one. What do you think, Betsy? Was that the big one?
One of the biggest that we have had. They estimate now that it was 6.3 on the Richter scale. But as I mentioned, the epicenter was out in the channel. I'm sure it would have been far worse had the epicenter been right here. It does not seem to be as strong as the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco because of the fires there.
And then I can't remember, but was there, so the Chicago tragedy was, that was just a fire. There was no quake in Chicago, was there?
Right. Yeah. They occasionally have earthquakes in Chicago. I used to live there, but it was big fire, 1871.
Okay. Sherry, take over for me. Ask Betsy a couple questions. What am I missing?
Oh, well, Betsy, I have to just say, and thank you for having me on today. Betsy came to a class that I have, and she did some of her talk, and my students were just absolutely thrilled. And one of the things that I really liked was that Betsy got into character with some of a recounting of the stories of the survivors, which was kind of wonderful. And some of the ladies who spoke about their, you know, their experiences during the earthquake. So I thank you, Betsy, for that and for how do you get into character with these survivors? It's pretty wonderful.
Well, one of my big questions was, what would it have been like? I mean, yes, there's a lot of information about the buildings that fell down, the ones that were rebuilt, but what was it like to be there? And there are a lot of stories from mm-hmm. people, and I just find that fascinating.
Yeah, I think we can really relate to that, yeah.
Betsy, can you do one of your survivors?
Oh, gosh, I don't have the script with me.
Okay. So go ahead, Sherry. I wanted to ask Betsy a little bit about the jail, our jail, and what happened if any of the prisoners were, I don't know, escapees at that time?
Yeah, well, the jail was made of brick and badly damaged. And I don't know that they got out and ran away, the prisoners. But again, this seems to be fairly calm. The prisoners that were deemed to be dangerous were sent to a jail in Ventura. And the ones that were, I guess, just misdemeanor guys were allowed to go home here, but they had to come back every day and help clean up the debris. Cleaning up the debris was a huge task. Not only cleaning it up and picking it up, but then putting it somewhere. A lot of it was put in basically what we now call the funk zone. That area was fairly low, would often flood. In fact, it flooded so much in the wintertime, they would land seaplanes there. And then in the summertime, when it dried out, they would have circuses and rodeos there. So that area was always kind of low. So the city was actually happy to put a bunch of debris there. And I recently talked to a Santa Barbara City archaeologist who mentioned when they dig for assessing whether something could be built in a certain place, they find debris from the earthquake.
In the funk zone, how interesting. So the cleanup, Sherry, you know a bit about the cleanup involved.
Well, I know a lot more about the reconstruction efforts, but I wanted to add something really interesting. There apparently were some female inmates also at the jail at the time, and they were all housed at the recreation center, so they didn't get to go free. But I just read that recently. I thought that was fascinating. That was Pearl's doing.
Yeah, and the recreation center was built of brick, built mm-hmm. in 1914, and that survived the earthquake just fine. Mm-hmm. It's brick veneer. I'm not sure what the construction is, but not everything fell down. Mm-hmm. And that was an important lesson in terms of how we should rebuild, looking at the things that did not fall down. And maybe, Sherry, you can talk about Julia Morgan's visit here.
You know, it's so interesting. Julia Morgan, the architect, was actually here in Santa Barbara on the day of the earthquake. And she had experienced the San Francisco earthquake in 1906. She was actually here to work with Pearl and the other board members of the Recreation Center to get her commission to build the Margaret Baylor Inn, which is the building right behind the Recreation Center. It's been known as the Libero Building. But she was here, and so she had this opportunity once again to experience a very big earthquake, and she wrote about it, and it's kind of remarkable that she happened to be here. And there was another important person who was actually the president of the American Seismologists Association, and his name was Bailey Willis. He was here in Santa Barbara on the day of the earthquake. So we had some very important people who were already knowledgeable about earthquakes and what comes after. So they were eyewitnesses to what happened here. It's pretty fascinating.
So did Julia Morgan build anything for us here?
She did. She designed the Libero Building, which they're now calling the Julia. But yes, she did design that, which was created to be a hotel for women travelers. And it was like women who were coming to Santa Barbara to work. And it had been a long dream of Margaret Baylor, who had been the social worker who established the Recreation Center. And she also designed the gymnasium next door to the Recreation Center. There's also a building that she had built some years before, a tuberculosis clinic out at the public health department area out in that part of town. But I don't know exactly if that building's still around anymore. But she and Pearl had known each other at UC Berkeley. She was a bit older than Pearl, but they had known each other. They had been sorority sisters as well. So Julia had a long history here in Santa Barbara.
So I didn't know that. I remember studying Bernard Maybach, and he was influential with Julia. And I stayed in her around the campus there, the place she designed for women travelers. Actually, a bunch of us all stayed there studying this particular architect, and she was pretty amazing, remarkable. I mean, Luda Ray, we have this history of really influential female architects that have, pulled our city up to where it is. So tell us a little bit now. I'm fascinated to know, Bernard and Irene Hoffman never came up on my radar before. And I want to hear your lecture on June 27th about them. But tell me about them. I know they had a history in Stockbridge in Massachusetts, and he was very influential in like the old, there was in the 20s, I can remember the 1920, 1925. I can remember my grandmother collecting. She was on the East Coast, and she collected early American furniture, real early American furniture. There was a fashion in the 20s for collecting, vintage Americana. And so, tell me a little bit about Bernard and Irene.
Well, they did come from Stockbridge. Actually, Irene had come from Chicago. I hadn't realized earlier, but I've learned in the last year or so that Irene was a very, very wealthy young woman. When her father was one of the people that was instrumental in starting the stockyards in Chicago, and he sold off his business just before The Jungle came out by Upton Sinclair. So he was very, very wealthy. And when he passed, she was his only heir. And she got an inheritance of about $8 million in 1919, which translates to about a $200 million today. So they were extremely wealthy. It turns out that their daughter had diabetes, and they were desperate to find help for their daughter. And they were very wealthy, and they were able to get on the trials here in Santa Barbara with Dr. Potter, who actually passed away, and then she was able to get insulin from Dr. Sansom. So they relocated. At least they wintered here in Santa Barbara, and they restored their daughter Margaret to health. So it was kind of this little accidental thing that brought them here to Santa Barbara. Now, the name Hoffman is important also because Ralph Hoffman was Bernard's brother, and he helped establish the Natural History Museum. So we have some pretty luminary people from New England who were already steeped in this idea of historic preservation. They come to Santa Barbara And they're just entranced by this completely different look and feel and the historic appeal. And they actually purchased Casa de la Guerra and restored it. And it was actually, it was in a state of disrepair. And there was concern at that point that maybe, you know, it wouldn't last, but they preserved it. And it was actually, if you think about it, it was sort of the heart of the city. It's just adjacent to City Hall. So when they did this, it made huge headlines all over. And then they built El Paseo, which is connected actually to Casa de la Guerra. So they were really responsible, like in 1922, for restoring and building in the Spanish style, well before the earthquake happened. And they put a great deal of capital into building these buildings and were very influential with local architects. Betsy mentioned that Santa Barbara High School, for example, was built in the Spanish style in 1924. The Libero Theater, there were so many buildings that were they had this vision already of the new Santa Barbara, the new Spain. And yeah, so that's a little bit about them. They were fascinating. It's really sad that we're not more aware of their very important influence. And he was an engineer in New York and was very highly respected. So he became the person, the point person, basically, for the rebuilding effort that began right after the earthquake. In fact, they hosted a giant dinner party at Casa de la Guerra on July 10th, the evening of the 10th. So that was just less than 2 weeks after the earthquake. And that's when they all came up with the plan, okay, we're going to rebuild Santa Barbara in the Spanish style.
What did Pearl think of them?
Oh, they were very close. It turns out that he brought this idea with him, that Stockbridge had something called the Laurel Hill Association, which was a historic preservation organization that began in 1853. And he knew about that. His father had worked on the Laurel Hill Association. He brought it to Santa Barbara, and they started the Community Arts Association. And Bernard was the president, and Pearl was the secretary. And they were an incredibly great team, the three of them together. Irene had the money and the vision. You know, Bernard had the experience and the gravitas. And Pearl had all the local contacts. And my thinking is that neither one of them could have done this alone, but all together, they were a powerhouse. And, you know, he would not have had the contacts in Santa Barbara society that Pearl had, because she had grown up, well, since 1900, she had grown up here. She was solid in this community. And so they were quite a force. Pearl got the grant from the Carnegie Foundation that sponsored the Community Arts Association. And that was the organization that basically ran everything before and after the earthquake. So it was very solid and very important.
And so let's go to quick break. But when we get back from the break, I want to ask you, Sherry, and also Betsy, were there detractors? In other words, were there opponents to what Pearl and Bernard and Irene were proposing for the city? Were there people that said, this is, you know, not the direction we should go? The Spanish colonial is not the direction. I wonder if there were any detractors. Richard, let's go to a quick break. We get back from the break. Let's talk a little bit about the road not taken, maybe. Yeah, don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
Thank you.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart speaking with Betsy J. Green and Sherry Ray. Sherry's book, A String of Pearls, about pearl chase and the rebuilding efforts after the great earthquake of 1925. And that is the reason for the show today, is because the celebration of the earthquake, 100-year celebration, is coming up. Earthquake Day is going to be June 28th downtown and on the block of 1100 block of State Street. So come ahead and you can meet Betsy there. She'll be there at the booth sponsored by the Historical Society. She'll have a big sign, Ask the Historian. You can ask any question of her that is history related. So Sherry, who didn't want Pearls and Bernard's vision in town? Who didn't?
It's really interesting that you ask that question, because this is a sort of an unknown part. Everybody thinks everyone's in lockstep. Bernard had a great deal of power. He was unelected. He was the head of the Architectural Board of Review, and he was a very, you know, a powerful man. And some of the merchants and the land, the people that owned the properties on State Street, began to feel a little uncomfortable. While they believed that it was a great idea for tourism and to have this beautiful idea of unified architecture, Hoffman's big proponent of an arcade. He wanted a look, it's kind of like in Ojai, there's the arcade that goes all the way down State Street. That's what he envisioned, was all the way down State Street. It would have uniform lighting, and also there wouldn't be shade and sun on both sides. So it would all be very uniform and beautiful. They started objecting to that. And very early on, Bernard began to realize, like, you know, this was so the earthquake happened at the end of June. By September, he's marshaling forces and reaching out to some of his contacts across the country and asking for help and support. And by November, when there was a new election in town, they decided that they were going to abolish the Architectural Board of Review, and everything was going to change. And so ironically, Thomas Stork was one of the people who was absolutely against the amount of power that Bernard Hoffman had. And I think there was some resentment that this, you know, he was sort of seen perhaps as a rich interloper with tons of power, although he was doing something so grand and so generously, promoting with and investing so much money and time and effort. He actually, by March, not even a year later, it was 8 months later, he was out. He was already pushed out. And as Pearl said in her oral history, it broke his heart. Mm. He continued to be the president of the Community Arts Association, but they ended up taking a much more of a backseat. They overwintered here in Santa Barbara, still a part of society, but it was always very different. And so then they went back to Stockbridge eventually. And there's a letter, there's a letter that Irene wrote to Pearl in 1944, and she commended her for all of her work, but she said, "But don't let them kill you." And I thought that was quite evocative. They were really shocked, I think, by the turn of events that happened. And it's probably why we don't really know or hear much about the Hoffmans. But if you go to El Paseo, there is a large tile mural there dedicated to them. And, you know, that's pretty much the only memorial to the Hoffmans that I know of in town.
We just have 1 minute left, but I wanted to add, what happened to the Architectural Review Board? It certainly is in force now.
It came back in 1947.
And well, listen, enough.
It never happened. Yeah. Yeah.
I see. Okay. The books that you need, number one, if you're interested in the rebuild, it's going to be A String of Pearls. That's Sherry Ray's book. It's everywhere. Betsy's book, Back When, and it's a book about 1925, and you'll read all about the earthquake. And then Earthquake Day, take a look at EQ25. That's the website. It gives you all of the wonderful things that are happening, of which, you know, I mentioned at least 20 in this month. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Betsy. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.